Welcome to another edition of the NPR Movie Podcast, your weekly dose of all things movies from your friends here at NPR. Since the last time we talked, the Oscars held the attention of the movie world, but Hollywood isn't the only game in town. This week, we'll hear about a film school for a distinct group of film students, and we'll also hear about films made for a distinct audience. But first, we'll hear a story about the mystery of a missing Oscar statuette.
Academy Award history is littered with fascinating stories, including more than a few about missing and stolen Oscars. Just days before the 2000 ceremony, 55 statuettes disappeared from a Los Angeles loading dock. All but two were later recovered. Then there's the case of Hattie McDaniel. The native of Wichita, Kansas, got her Oscar as Best Supporting Actress for the 1939 epic Gone with the Wind. She was the first African-American to win an Oscar, but hers has been missing for some 40 years. Carla Eccles of member station KMUW in Wichita looks into the mystery.
Hattie McDaniel acted in more than 300 movies, but she's best known for her role as Mammy, the maid in Gone with the Wind.
Mammy, darling.
No use to try to sweet-talk me, Miss Scarlett. I knows you ever since I put the first pair of diapers on you. I said I was going to land with you, and going I is.
Carlton Jackson, author of Hattie, The Life of Hattie McDaniel, says he thinks the actress since she was in the running for an Academy Award.
She wrote to some of her friends that she was sort of holding her breath, waiting for the announcement. But she didn't make a big deal of it until she got it. Then she made that speech where she could just barely finish because she was overcome emotionally.
This is one of the happiest moments of my life, and I shall always hold it as a beacon for anything that I may be able to do in the future. I sincerely hope I shall always be a credit to my race and to the motion picture industry. My heart is too full to tell you just how I feel, and may I say thank you.
In the years before World War II, winners in the supporting actress category received plaques, not the Oscar statuettes. McDaniel proudly displayed hers at her home. Towards the end of her life, author Carlton Jackson says she became ill from breast cancer.
She began to parcel out various of her worldly goods, and she presented this Oscar to Howard University in Washington, D.C.
The plaque went on display at Howard's Fine Arts Complex. Thomas Battle is the current director of the Moreland Spingarn Research Center at Howard. He says that exactly when the award disappeared remains a mystery.
The understanding that I've developed has been that it was probably in the late 1960s or early 1970s, perhaps during a period of student unrest at the university. But unfortunately, all of the principals who would have been involved at the university at that time, administrators and others, are no longer with us, and we have not been able to get the kind of direct information that we would like to be able to pursue this investigation further.
Denise Randall was there. Beginning in 1972, she was responsible for tracking the university's inventory of artifacts. If the plaque did disappear during the student unrest of the late 60s, Randall says it might have been thrown away by someone upset that the award was for a black woman's role as a servant.
The sentiment at the time, if it was during the upheaval, it's quite possible someone being upset with her role at that time was black power, black power. But they may not have understood where she really stood in the film industry and the pioneer that she was.
But Randall, who now lives in Wichita, says she thinks McDaniel's Academy Award was simply misplaced.
I think it was someone who moved it to a safe place and then didn't tell anyone where they moved it, and then since either retired or forgot about it. But in looking at the fine arts department, where it would be the most logical place, we couldn't find it.
For nearly 20 years, Wichita actress Carla Burns has portrayed Hattie McDaniel in one-woman shows. She has her own theory about what happened to the plaque.
I do not believe that Hattie McDaniel's Oscar was thrown away. I believe that it was stolen. The representation of African-American people at that time was very powerful because she had done something no one else had ever done. And the next African-American woman to win was 51 years later with Whoopi Goldberg.
But there's one more possibility. Everyone could have been looking for an Oscar statuette and overlooked the plaque McDaniel actually received. For NPR News, I'm Carla Eccles in Wichita.
Let's drop in on some particularly edgy filmmakers now. They won't be up for Oscars tonight, but they've only got a few more weeks before their big premiere.
After he leaves his wife, mm-hmm. and when he buys his suit and his motorcycle, that's definitely going to have music because...
They're teenagers, about to graduate from the ghetto film school in the South Bronx. They shot their live-action short, Live Joseph, on location in Uganda last summer. Okay, it's not opening at a theater near you unless you live in Lower Manhattan. And come to think of it, even if you do, its screening next month is a one-night-only affair, no breaking the rope line. But we could still eavesdrop on its creation, because right now, the filmmakers are racing the clock to get it done.
And as far as, like, the type of music, we definitely want to keep it ethnic. So things in the nature of, like, African drum beats or, like, mostly, like, percussion sort of things would go with that so that it stays in the theme of Africa.
Alma Osario and Nia Fields are the student filmmakers. They're working on their original music score in lofty Lower Manhattan editing suites. But their film is set a world away. And they're talking to a real film composer, Gil Tommy.
Well, I think you're on to a lot here. I mean, I think it's very important to respect cultures. And certainly if we put a Viennese waltz in there, that would be strange. But having said that, I want to throw this on the table. It's also important to allow a story to become more universal than just its location.
Student director Alma Osario explains that the plot of Live Joseph is kind of a stand-in for their own filmmaking experience. Carpe diem.
Live Joseph is about a man who is not happy with his life, and one day he gets bitten by a snake that everyone knows that once you get bitten by that snake, you die in 24 hours. So what he decides to do is the different things that he never did in his life before in those last 24 hours that he has to live.
I don't love you. I never have. I always wanted to marry Mila. And the only one good thing that could come out of this is that this marriage is over.
You are a miserable man, Joseph.
The Ghetto Film School is exactly where Joe Hall thought it would be when he founded it 9 years ago. Before that, Hall was a social worker in the Bronx for almost a decade. In 1999, he wanted to take what he'd learned there to film school at the University of Southern California.
The Bronx was coming back. It's an amazing story that still hasn't been told. And I also knew that people's idea of the Bronx is pretty much Fort Apache, the Bronx. Mm-hmm. You know, this really awful film that tells a story that to this day really hasn't been repudiated by anything else.
Y'all just take a look at this.
That film was made in 1981. 2 decades later, when Joe Hall got out of film school, he didn't become a filmmaker, but he gained a filmmaker's sensibility. He brought the tools he got at USC back east to start a film school in the Bronx.
Ghetto Film School was founded as this middle broker organization that was going to connect disparate communities, different ghettos, right? There's the Hollywood ghetto, there's the South Bronx, what have you.
And when he sat down with young people in the Bronx, they knew just what they wanted and didn't want.
They didn't want another project that was going to treat them as at risk. And then someone said, yeah, it's not like we want a ghetto film school. And everyone laughed. And I thought that it was a very interesting name because no one ever forgets the name. And it is provocative. It makes people ask the question. If someone's going to move beyond YouTube, I think they're going to need to know how to connect the dots. And more than anything else, that's what our program is teaching them.
This film school meets for 15 months of after school and summer session. It's also free for the students, underwritten by the City of New York and companies like J.P. Morgan Chase and Time Warner. The Ghetto Film School students make narrative fiction films. They use industry-grade equipment, and they learn the critical art of networking, boosted by support from top-flight directors like David O. Russell, who made Three Kings and was Hall's first board member. And when the students shoot their annual thesis film, they do it in a foreign country on a budget of just under $100,000. Last summer, they went to Uganda. That was a real challenge for student cinematographer George Velez.
It looked like it was going to rain. Then the next minute, the sun would come out, and it would be like such an unforgiving sun. the lighting needs to remain consistent. You know, you can't have a cloudy day and then have it sunny in the same scene because, you know, for continuity and the scene doesn't flow as easily.
Founder Joe Hall is insistent that the program be judged on the quality of the film, not on the quality of the student's relative experience. Hall says that for a young director, not every choice is about a shot or a cut.
The young woman who was 15 at the time, in crewing the project that went to Uganda, did not select her best friend in the group.
Ooh.
And I thought that was pretty amazing at that age to be able to think, here's our friendship, but I also need the very best group that I can put together to go to Africa and make a film.
Alma Osorio wants to make films with integrity. Hopefully, a word she'll still be able to use when she's a professional.
I think what makes a good story is when you're passionate about it. Because if you care about a story a lot, then that's when others will begin to care about it also. So it has to be something that means a lot to you, even if it's the weirdest thing. If you're passionate about it, then other people will learn to find it important also.
Each of the 20 or so class members writes a script for the annual project. Then they get together and vote on the one they want to shoot. The winning writer chooses the director. Hey, in your dreams, Hollywood screenwriters. The director chooses the crew. Editor Nia Fields knows exactly what she wants people to take away from Liv Joseph.
I want people to actually kind of do stuff with their life after they watch the movie, because some people just lay around the house and, you know, watch soaps and stuff like that, which isn't a problem. But, like, you know, do stuff you always wanted to do. Go to trapeze class or something. Like, I know it was weird, but that's kind of been something I wanted to do, so.
In September, New York City and the Ghetto Film School will open a public high school in the Bronx devoted to filmmaking. It's going to be called the Cinema School. Most of these kids in the Ghetto Film School want to go on to college at Hall's alma mater, USC. Cinematographer George Velez turned 17 today, Oscar Day. Sometimes he feels like pinching himself.
If you'd have told me this when I was like 12, you're going to shoot a movie in Uganda when you're 16, I'd say you're crazy.
And tonight's Academy Awards, you know, these kids sound like indie filmmakers already.
Oscars is more kind of shady sometimes. If you're a filmmaker, at least if not now, somewhere down the line, you kind of want one or you would like to get one day. I'm not sure, like, why some stuff gets chosen. I think that's just my taste, though.
I don't really like award shows very much because I don't feel like, you know, someone's success would be measured by, like, what award they got. My goal in the future with film isn't necessarily to be the most popular or the one with the most money. If you did a good project and you feel comfortable with it, then that's what makes you successful.
That means everybody wins, right? Not like the Oscars. Liv Joseph screens on March 27th at Red Bull Space in Manhattan. To watch a clip from last year's Ghetto Film School thesis project, Ayalor Charlotte, visit npr.org.
Conservative Christians, appalled by sex and violence in mainstream entertainment, are turning out their own films, and as NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty reports, they've made surprising inroads.
Okay, here's a quiz. What was the biggest grossing independent film in 2008? No, not Slumdog Millionaire, not Milk. It was a movie you've probably never heard of.
In the last few weeks, God has given me a love for you that I have never had before. And I have asked him to forgive me.
Fireproof, starring former teen idol Kirk Cameron, was the talk of these movie fans gathered in San Antonio last month.
Welcome to the 2009 San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival.
This crowd was markedly un-Hollywood. The men wearing jeans and polo shirts, the women in high necklines and low hems. The lights had hardly dimmed for the opening ceremonies when Doug Phillips, the festival's organizer, told the audience they were drawing the Maginot Line in the culture wars.
We're here to send a message to the world that we no longer want our children immersed in toxic media, which is in opposition to the Lord Jesus Christ.
Instead of just complaining about sex and violence, Phillips says, Christians must make films that reflect their own values. So he started the film festival 5 years ago when he realized that Christians were losing the hearts and minds of the young.
What is the single biggest influence on our families? I wish I could tell you that the single biggest influence were churches, but that regretfully is not the case. The truth of the matter is that it is the media that people take in which are shaping and forming ideas.
If Christians want to compete in the world of ideas, he says, they have to make great movies. This festival is putting up a $101,000 top prize to help them get there. And Philip says, this is only the beginning.
I think that we're going to see significant production houses which are going to be funding $200 million films done by Christians. We're going to have our own Steven Spielbergs.
And these Christian directors will make movies about subjects that evangelicals care about, like dramas about abortion.
If you don't get rid of this pregnancy, our relationship is over.
In case you haven't noticed, this relationship was over the moment you insisted on killing our child.
Documentaries about homeschooling.
History is once again repeating itself as a free people willingly exchange their educational liberties for the shackles of government support.
And musicals about taxation.
Stand up, be strong, do not ignore the widow's cry for help you hear. The laws of God you should revere.
The Widow's Mite tells the story of a woman about to lose her home to tax foreclosure and the two families that help her with her lonely battle against the government. In the end, the widow prevails, to the delight of Jeff Rains of Fort Worth.
It was awesome. Awesome. A lot of good biblical principles and messages in there.
Like courage and integrity, he says. Becky Dura from Kaufman, Texas, says she wishes Hollywood would turn out movies like this, but she says Hollywood has a tin ear for the Christian audience.
I don't think they'll ever get it. They will try to mimic it. You can't mimic Christ. They'll never get the love part. They'll never get forgiveness. They don't get any of that because they don't think they need it.
I think anything can be redeemed by the power of Jesus Christ.
19-year-old John Robert Moore is the writer, director, and leading man in The Widow's Mite.
But I believe that the path that God has set forth before us, which can be seen by the blessing he's put on this industry so far in its very short movement, is evidence to the fact that he wants us to work in an entirely new industry from the ground up.
Steve Morales concurs. He's the executive director of Franklin Springs Family Media, a group that invests in Christian films. He's here in San Antonio scouting for talent. He says because Christians care more about wholesome stories than big stars and budgets, the movies are cheap to make and quickly turn a profit through box office and DVD sales.
We're out for good, strong, economically viable films which fill a niche that is unmet right now. Blockbusters are great, but that's not the end goal.
That goal, he says, is to glorify God and perhaps to make the young ladies swoon. What has been your favorite movie so far?
Fireproof! This is my fifth time to see it.
Julia Spence is an 18-year-old freshman at Louisiana Baptist University.
Oh, it's absolutely amazing.
Why?
Oh, why? Oh, because, well, first of all, it presents the plan of salvation in an amazing and in a way that could touch everyone's heart. And also because it's romantic and it's special and sweet, and I just love it.
Fireproof touches all the bases for this audience.
Shut up! I'm sick of you! You disrespectful, ungrateful, selfish woman!
The raw emotion of a marriage on the brink of divorce. The conversion experience.
God sent Jesus to die on the cross and take the punishment for your sin because he loves you.
And finally, forgiveness and redemption.
And if I haven't told you that I love you, I do.
Fireproof earned $33 million at the box office, but it cost only $500,000 to make. It was written and directed by two brothers from a Baptist church in Georgia. The cast was all church members, with one exception, Kirk Cameron, the former star of Growing Pains and himself an evangelical Christian, offered to work for free.
It was the heart of the people who made the movie, combined with their ability to tell a story with redeeming values to it, that made me want to be part of the team.
Fireproof opened at number 4 in the nation last September, beating out Spike Lee's Miracle of St. Anna.
Monday morning after opening weekend of Fireproof, we got a call from one of the guys at the Hollywood Reporter, and he said, "Who in the world are you, and what in the world is Fireproof?" Of course, he used much more salty speech.
Stephen Kendrick co-wrote and produced Fireproof.
He says, well, do you realize what you just did? I've been tracking every movie that's coming out. He said, that's my job. Fireproof was not even on our radar screen.
So how did they do it? By flipping Hollywood marketing on its head, says Ben Howard, who runs Provident Films, which marketed Fireproof. Howard says instead of spending millions on advertising, Provident gave sneak previews to select groups.
We did a lot of screenings showing the film to influencers.
That would be pastors?
Those would be pastors. Those would be ministry leaders. Those would be people who speak to the audience.
Like The Purpose-Driven Life before it, Fireproof became a topic of sermons, Bible studies, radio talk shows, and an inspiration for the young Christian filmmakers in San Antonio. At the grand finale, awards were presented for the best creation movie, the best family movie, the best musical, and finally,
the winner of the 2009 San Antonio Independent Christian Film Festival Award, $101,000 for Best of Festival, goes to The Widow's Mite!
This is a moment in history, said Doug Phillips, a moment that can spark a new generation of filmmakers, ones that will produce movies that are, quote, truly meaningful to the kingdom of God. Barbara Bradley Haggerty, NPR News.
For more about these and other movies, visit our website, npr.org/movies.